gives me great joy to have the chance to introduce Father John Che Hughes. If you've seen the front cover of his biography, that is he with the subject matter of this next talk. But this isn't the first time that Father Hughes has met Joseph Ratzinger. He was his student in Germany a few years back. And Jay has a homily service, more or less, that he sends on out to guys every year, in which he incorporates many of the very principles that we're hearing him talk about in the preaching of Pope Benedict, and that we've heard in the other talks. That's totally free. Just get him an email at the end. He's got 11 books total, including this one. He's got a book on the parables. He's really a church historian, a priest of the Archdiocese of St. Louis, who's going to be speaking to us about preaching in Joseph Ratzinger, Pope Benedict XVI. So, Jay.
Now, as you saw, there are copies of this book out there on the table, and five have been taken, and one has been paid. I used to tell people, the book is free, my autograph costs $20. And then I found out that there are a lot of literal fundamentalists out there with no sense of humor. So if you want to keep a copy of the book, I do ask that you pay for it. Of course, I will sign it for you. And if you don't, I take cash or check. I do not take Visa or MasterCard. And if you don't have a check, you can send it to me, but do be kind enough to give me your name and address so that I can be in contact with you. So, and the book is the story of my very difficult journey to the Catholic Church. And it is the story of a man who 59 years after ordination is still, as you will hear in the talk, in love with priesthood. And that's the story worth telling. Now, brothers, I've entitled the talk with Ratzinger, "The Strongest Man Capitulates." I'll explain that in a moment. And the subtitle, titled "Pope Benedict XVI as Preacher of the Good News." And I want to start with a quotation, and it goes like this. All of us long for a Pentecostal church, a church in which the Spirit rules and not the letter, a church in which understanding breaks down the fences we erect against each other. We're impatient with a church that seems so un-Pentecostal, so unspiritual, so narrow, and so fearful. And I ask you, brothers, is there any one of us that doesn't agree with those words? They were spoken by Joseph Ratzinger in the homily at his episcopal ordination as Archbishop of Munich on the Vigil of Pentecost, May 28, 1977, some 6 weeks after his 50th birthday. Did he continue to preach that message as Pope Benedict XVI? I am going to argue in this talk that the note of joy, which you will hear again and again as I go through some of his utterances, allows us to give an affirmative answer to that question. Now, I first encountered Joseph Ratzinger shortly after Easter 1965, when I began my studies for the German Dr. Theol at the University of Münster, the capital of Westphalia in northern Germany, a part of that country then so deeply imbued with the ancient faith that its citizens used to say, "We don't care what they do there and down there in Rome, we're staying Catholic." And another wonderful story that they tell in Munster characterizes the Catholic type of Catholicism about the person who confessed to experiencing joy as he listened to Protestant church bells. Now, Ratzinger, who is then just 38 years of age, I'm just 13 months younger than he is, was professor of fundamental theology in the Catholic Theological Faculty. A modest and shy man, we used to see him riding around town on an ancient bicycle wearing a beret. A native of Bavaria in southern Germany, he was widely reported to have said, "The best thing about Munster is the railway ticket to Munich." I must confess, brothers, I had difficulty sympathizing with that. I was 3,000 miles away from my home and I was having a ball. And surely I thought, a man who lived in the world of ideas should be able to feel at home anywhere. Any negative thoughts quickly vanished, however, once I encountered Professor Ratzinger in the university lecture hall. He lectured three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 8 o'clock in the morning, CT, a German university abbreviation which means cum tempore, in other words, at 8:15. The lectures were beyond question the most riveting and the most beautiful of any I have ever heard on any subject at any of the three universities where I've studied. After each lecture, one wanted to go into a church and pray. He speaks print ripe, the German students used to say. You could have made a tape recording of the lecture and printed it just as spoken with hardly a correction. And Ratzinger's hearers regularly included people who came in from the town to hear him before they went to their places of work. Among the hearers was a Protestant student from South Africa. Ah, he'll convert, the German students predicted confidently. By Ratzinger, with Ratzinger, fällt der stärkste Mann, falls the strongest man, over. And that gives me, of course, the title for the talk, with Ratzinger, the strongest man capitulates. That was a student jest, of course, but a quarter of a century later, it proved true when the German journalist Peter Seewald in German, produced the first of several books containing the transcript of recorded conversations with then Cardinal Ratzinger. You'll find them listed on the handout. Though raised as a Catholic, Seewald soon abandoned Christian faith to become an atheistic communist. He returned to the practice of his childhood faith after those first tape-recorded conversations with Cardinal Ratzinger. And I submit that's the bottom line. The lectures were interlarded with frequent citations from the Church Fathers, especially from Augustine. As a seminarian, Joseph Ratzinger had entered an academic competition by submitting a dissertation on the notions of the people of God and the house of God in Augustine, and the faculty was so impressed that they gave him a doctorate in theology. And I soon realized that I was listening to a theologian who spoke from within church tradition, not the narrow legalistic tradition of what the Jesuit John O'Malley aptly has called the long 19th century. It lasted right up to 1950 at least, a version of the faith which kept me out of the church for many years and which is still fiercely insisted upon by the Brotherhood of St. Pius X. Ratzinger spoke from within the far broader and deeper tradition of two millennia. Now let me turn now to Benedict's preaching as Pope. First, I'd like to consider some of his ad limina addresses to the world's bishops in just one year, 2006, the year after he was elected. He told the bishops of Ghana on the 24th of April of that year to help their seminarians become effective and fulfilled ministers of Christ's joy. Is that word? I used my computer to count the number of times that joy is in this talk. It's 28 times. 28 times. On September 8th, he spoke to the bishops of Ontario about the urgent need to recapture the profound joy and awe of the first disciples. The exuberance and joy of Catholic worship in Africa was known all over the world, Benedict told the bishops of Malawi on the 29th of September. They must see that their catechists and teachers were well formed in the faith and able to communicate, this is a quote, both the joy and the challenge of following Christ. On October 16th, he told the bishops of Zambia always to communicate to their priests the joy of serving the Lord with a proper detachment from the things of this world. May your witness as men filled with hope of the resurrection lead your people to an ever greater appreciation of the joys that the Lord has promised to us. Benedict's address to the Irish bishops on the 28th of October 2006 made headlines worldwide because it mentioned, quote, the many heart-rending cases of sexual abuse of minors by priests and religious, bringing healing to the victims and to all those affected by these egregious crimes, Benedict said, was of paramount importance. Hardly mentioned in the media was his insistence, and I quote, that the principles of justice be fully respected. And this, brothers, I suggest, has special relevance or significance for the church in our country. The days when our bishops tried to defend the good name of the church by throwing the victims under the bus are happily behind us. Since the Dallas Charter of 2002, however, adopted in an atmosphere of panic and fear, it is sometimes priests who are thrown under the bus. Completely ignored was Benedict's injunction to the Irish bishops, quote, to help people recognize the inability of the secular materialist culture to bring satisfaction and joy, be bold in speaking to them of the joy that following Christ that comes from following Christ and living according to his commandments. Remind them that our hearts were made for the Lord, and that they find no peace until they rest in him. A reference, of course, to the celebrated quote from Augustine, you've made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they find rest in you. Speaking to the Swiss bishops on the 9th of November 2006, Benedict deplored the widespread identification of the church, quote, with certain commandments and prohibitions. We give the impression that we're moralists with a few somewhat antiquated convictions, and not even a hint of the true greatness of the faith appears. I therefore consider it essential always to highlight the greatness of our faith. And one way of doing this, Benedict said, was to train people in prayer through which we can become joyful in God, he said. Prayer is hope in action. Preaching during a concelebrated mass with the Swiss bishops on the topic God never fails, Benedict introduced a note of surprise by telling them that God does fail again and again. If you want people to listen up, brothers, surprise them. God failed in Adam, the Pope said, who was not satisfied with God's friendship, but wanted to be a God himself. And yet, God did not fail. For in Christ, he becomes a man himself, and so begins a new humanity. He roots God's being in a human being, and descended to the deepest abysses of man's being. He humbled himself even unto the cross. He overcame pride with the humility and obedience of the cross. The parable of the banquet, Benedict said in Luke 14, is also about divine failure. Benedict said, God's invitation to the banquet was rejected by the leaders and authorities of Jesus' day, and it is rejected by many in the West today who excuse themselves, who have no time to come to the Lord. And yet, God does not fail, because he finds ever new ways to reach people and to open wider his great house so that it is completely filled. And Benedict went on, during these ad limina visits, I hear of many serious and tiresome things, but always, precisely from the third world, I also hear this, that people listen, that they come, and that even today, the message spreads out along the roads to the very ends of the earth, and that the people crowd into God's hall for his banquet. How can we reach those too busy to accept God's invitation to his banquet, the Pope asked? We must make an effort, above all, he said, to listen to the Lord in prayer, in deep interior participation in the sacraments, in learning the sentiments of God in the safe faces and sufferings of others, in order to be infected by his joy, his zeal, and his love, and to look at the world with him and starting from him. If we can succeed in doing this, then even in the midst of the many no's, we will once again find people waiting for him, who may perhaps often be odd, the parable says this, but who are nevertheless called to enter his hall. Well, let me turn now, brothers, to a very different audience. Thousands of young people gathered for an outdoor evening vigil on the 24th of September 2011 at Freiburg in Breisgau in southwest Germany. As his hearers lit the candles that they held in their hands from the candles of their neighbors, he spoke about how this happens at the Easter vigil. One tiny flame spreads out to become many lights, he said, and fills the darkness of God's house with its brightness. This wonderful liturgical rite, which we have imitated tonight, reveals to us in signs more eloquent than words the mystery of our Christian faith. He, Christ, who says of himself, I am the light of the world, causes our lives to shine brightly, so that what we have heard in the gospel reading tonight comes true. You are the light of the world. It's mysterious and wonderful, the Pope said, that Jesus applies the same predicate to himself and to each one of us, namely, light. If we believe that he is the Son of God, who healed the sick and raised the dead, who rose from the grave himself and is truly alive, then we can understand that he is the light, the source of all the lights in this world. On the other hand, we experience more and more the failure of our efforts and our personal shortcomings despite our good intentions. In the final analysis, the world in which we live, in spite of its technical progress, does not seem to be getting any better. There's still war and terror, hunger and disease, bitter poverty and merciless oppression. And even those figures in our history who saw themselves as bringers of light, but without being fired by Christ, the one true light, did not manage to create an earthly paradise, but set up dictatorships and totalitarian systems in which even the smallest spark of humanity is choked. We cannot remain silent, Benedict said, about the existence of evil. We see it in ourselves, sloth, laziness in doing good, The church is damaged most not by her opponents, but by uncommitted Christians. So how can Christ say that we're the light of the world? Perhaps, the Pope said, we could understand it if he called out to us, if he were to call out to us, repent, be the light of the world, change your life, make it bright and radiant. He wants us to shine, to light up the darkness. St. Paul did not shrink, the Pope said, from calling members of his local community saints, people made holy by baptism. Too often, he said, people think that being a saint means being removed from this world, naive and joyless. There's no saint apart from the Blessed Virgin Mary who has not also known sin, who has never fallen. And then, brothers, comes this beautiful passage. Dear friend, Christ is not so much interested in how often in our lives we stumble and fall, as in how often with his help we pick ourselves up again. He doesn't demand glittering achievements. He wants his light to shine in you. He doesn't call you because you are good and perfect, but because he is good and he wants to make you his friend. Yes, you are the light of the world because Jesus is your light. You are Christians not because you do special and extraordinary things, but because he, Christ, is your life. You are holy. We are holy if we allow his grace to work in us. And you know, when I read those words, I couldn't help recalling something I read about preaching years ago by a Protestant author. You'll find it on your handout sheet. The Lord lays on no man a message that will discourage and dishearten his congregation. Touch, don't send your people home on flat tires. Touch positive emotions by preaching hope. Benedict's statement that the Lord doesn't call us because we're good and perfect reminded me of a story told by our Archbishop in St. Louis, Robert Carlson. Decades ago, when Carlson was vocation director in his home diocese of St. Paul, Minnesota, a young man considering seminary told Carlson that, well, I have to go home and pray about whether I'm good enough. And Carlson said, look, I'll save you some time. You're not good enough. He was right, of course. God doesn't call us, brothers, because we're good enough. No one is good enough to be a priest of Jesus Christ. The Curia of Ars wasn't good enough. Padre Pio wasn't good enough. The Pope's not good enough. The Lord calls us, not because we're good enough. He calls us because he loves us. Well, before I leave Pope Benedict's visit to Germany in September 2011, I'd like to tell you about a passage in his speech to the Bundestag, the German Parliament, in Berlin, a not entirely friendly audience. In fact, the Greens walked out only to have him include in his speech a lengthy passage about him protecting the environment and so forth. Recalling King Solomon's prayer at the not for success, wealth, or a long life, but for wisdom, the Pope said, and I quote, through this story, the Bible wants to tell us what should ultimately matter for a politician. His fundamental criterion and the motivation for his work as a politician must be not success, and certainly not material gain. Politics must be a striving for justice, and hence it has to establish the fundamental preconditions for peace. Naturally, a politician will seek success, as this is what opens up for him the possibility of effective political action. And yet, he said, success is subordinated to the criterion of justice, to the will to do what is right, and to the understanding of what is right. Success can also be seductive, and thus can open up the path towards the falsification of what is right, toward the destruction of justice. And then, without justice, what is the state but a great band of robbers? As St. Augustine once said, we Germans know from our own experience that these words are no empty specter. We've seen how power became divorced from right, how power opposed right and crushed it, so that the state became an instrument for destroying right, a highly organized band of robbers capable of threatening the whole world and driving it to the edge of the abyss. Last July, I preached on a Sunday in a great, beautiful medieval church in the cathedral city of Osnabrück. And the first reading was from Amos, the prophet of social justice, and so I took that as my theme. And as I spoke the Pope's words in the original German about a state without justice being nothing but a band of robbers, ein Räuberband, you could have heard a pin drop. Pope Benedict's teaching succeeds, I submit, because it is faithful to two statements about preaching, which I first came upon six decades ago, and which I've never forgotten, and they're both on your handout sheet. They're both from Anglican sources. I was an Anglican. The first is by William Ing, who was Dean of St. Paul's Cathedral in London from 1911 until 1934. And he said the gospel was not good advice, but good news. And the second is by a canon of the same cathedral, Vigo August de Mant, who wrote in 1936. How long ago is that? That's 44 plus 13, 57, whatever, almost 60 years ago. It's still just as true as the day he wrote them. Tell people only what they must do, and you will numb them into despair. You will turn the gospel into a shabby replica of the world's irreligious moralism with its ocean fulls of good advice. But tell them what they are. Tell them of their dignity as made in the image of God, and that their sins are wicked perversions of their nature. Tell them that the world with all its horrors is still God's world, though its true order is upside down. Tell them that they can do all things through Christ, because in him all the powers of their nature are directed to fruition, and you will help to revive hope in this dispirited generation. Brothers, those words have shaped my preaching since I first stood in the pulpit as an Anglican deacon 60 years ago. And I find them fulfilled time and again in the preaching of a man far more eloquent than I am, Pope Benedict, now Emeritus Pope the 16th. Consider what Benedict said about preaching at the Chrism Mass. Roger's already quoted it. And I hope you don't mind the repetition. That was just a year ago. All our preaching must measure itself against the saying of Jesus Christ, my teaching is not my own, it comes from him who sent me. We preach not private theories and opinions, but the faith of the church whose servants we are. If we do not preach ourselves, and if we are inwardly so completely one with him who called us to be his ambassadors, that we are shaped by faith and live it, then our preaching will be credible. I do not seek to win people for myself, but I give myself. The curate of ours was no scholar, no intellectual, we know that. His preaching touched people's hearts because his own heart had been touched. In the same homily, Benedict went on to speak about what he called an old-fashioned expression, not much used these days, animarum zealous, the zeal for souls. As priest, of course we're concerned for the whole person, he said, including his or her physical needs. We care for the hungry, the sick, the homeless, and yet we're concerned not only with the body, but also with the needs of the soul, with those who suffer from the violation of their rights or from destroyed love, with those unable to perceive the truth, those who suffer for lack of truth and love. We're concerned with the salvation of men and women in body and soul. And as priests of Jesus Christ, we carry out our task with enthusiasm. No one should ever have the impression that we work conscientiously when on duty, but before and after hours, we belong only to ourselves. A priest never belongs to himself. People must sense our zeal, the Pope said, through which we bear credible witness to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Let us ask the Lord to fill us with joy in his message, so that we may serve his truth and his love with joyful zeal. Benedict proclaimed the same message during his visit to this country in 2008. Preaching in Yankee Stadium in New York on the 20th of April that year, Benedict said, "Yesterday I was moved by the joy, the hope, and the generous love of Christ which I saw on the faces of the many young people assembled in Dunwoody," it's the seminary up in Yonkers. "They are the church's future, and they deserve all the prayer and support that you can give them." And so I wish to close by adding a special word of encouragement to them. My dear young friends, like the seven men filled with the Spirit and wisdom whom the apostles charged with care for the young church, first deacons, may you step forward and take up your responsibility which your faith in Christ sets before you. May you find the courage to proclaim Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever, and the unchanging truths which have their foundation in him. These are the truths that set us free. They're the truths which alone can guarantee respect for the inalienable dignity and rights of each man, woman, and child in our world, including the most defenseless of all human beings, the unborn child in the mother's womb. And the Pope went on, "In a world where, as Pope John Paul II, speaking in this very place, Yankee Stadium, reminded us, Lazarus continues to stand at our door. Let your faith and love bear rich fruit in your outreach to the poor, the needy, and those without a voice. Young men and women of America," he said, "I urge you, open your hearts to the Lord's call to follow him in the priesthood and in the religious life. Can there be any greater mark of love than this, to follow in the footsteps of Christ, who is willing to lay down his life for his friends?" In today's gospel, the Pope went on, "Lord promises his disciples that they will perform even greater works than his." Dear friends, only God in his providence knows what works his grace has yet to bring forth in your lives and in the life of the church in these United States. And yet Christ's promise fills us with hope. Let us now join our prayers to his as living stones in the spiritual temple which is his one holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. Let us lift our eyes to him, for even now he is preparing for us a place in his Father's house. And empowered by the Holy Spirit, let us work with renewed zeal for the spread of his kingdom. Happy are you who believe, Peter writes in his first letter. Let us turn to Jesus. He alone is the way that leads to eternal happiness, the truth who satisfies the deepest longings of the heart, and the life who brings ever new joy and hope to us and to our world. Amen. Benedict's preaching succeeds, I submit, because people recognize that the preacher was and is a man filled with joy. And he spoke about this joy when he visited an old folks' home on the 13th of November, just last year. "I come among you," he said, "as Bishop of Rome, but also as an old man visiting his bier. Sometimes, at a certain age, one looks to the past when recalling when one was young, enjoyed fresh energies, and made plans for the future. So at times, our outlook is clouded by sadness, considering this phase of life as a time of decline. This morning, I would like to say to you with profound conviction, it's beautiful to be old. It's necessary to discover in every age the presence and blessing of the Lord and the riches it contains. We must never let ourselves be imprisoned by sadness. We've received the gift of a long life. It's lovely to be able to live at our age despite some aches and pains and some limitations. On our face, there must always be the joy of feeling ourselves loved by God, never sadness." Brothers, nothing is more pathetic than the joyless proclaimer of the good news. How can we find the joy of which Pope Benedict speaks so often? How can we maintain it? Not only when our mouths are filled with laughter and our tongue with joy, to quote the psalmist, but when we journey, as all of us must from time to time, through the psalmist's dark valley? Well, I'm sure there's more than one way to maintain and cultivate joy. I can tell you only about what works for me: cultivating the prayer of thanksgiving. I started to do this as a schoolboy. My birthday is in mid of May. And 4 months after my 12th birthday, 1940, I went away to boarding school. And on my 13th birthday, the following May, and for at least the 3 more birthdays during my boarding school years, I used to spend time in the school chapel, kneeling or sitting before the Lord in the tabernacle. I would write a list of all the reasons that I had for thanksgiving, and it was always a long list, and it was never difficult to compile. Well, it's still okay since I've done that, but that adolescent practice has made the prayer of thanksgiving easy for me. My greatest reason for thanksgiving today, apart from my baptism, is my joy in priesthood. At age 12, the Lord planted in my heart the desire to be a priest. And from that day to this, I have never wanted anything else. Priesthood has brought me joys beyond telling. It has also brought me bitter grief and pain. If you were to ask me, however, if I were able to live my life over again, knowing in advance the worst that priesthood would throw at me, I would still choose to be a priest of Jesus Christ? I'd answer you without hesitation, in a heartbeat. I'd change just one thing. I'd try to be more faithful and, above all, more generous. Brothers, I was ordained a priest 59 years ago today. And brothers, I'm still head over heels in love with priesthood. I couldn't tell you how many times I say every day, Lord, you're so good to me, and I'm so grateful. Find your own way of doing that, saying that, brothers, and there'll be joy in your heart, a joy so intense that you'll be able to say with me, if I were to die tonight, I would die a happy man. Well, it's time to wrap it up. And so let me conclude by quoting some words of Pope Benedict XVI in his homily at the start of his Petri ministry on the 24th of April 2005. And as you'll hear, he quotes from his predecessor, Blessed John Paul II. The words are exhortation, yes, but as you will also hear, they are accompanied and supported by eloquent proclamation of the good news, not only for the young to whom he directs his words, but to all of us at any age. And the Pope's words, I submit, are an example of evangelical preaching at its best. Here's what he said. At this point, my mind goes back to the 22nd of October, 1978, when Pope John Paul II began his ministry here in St. Peter's Square. His words on that occasion constantly echo in my ears. Do not be afraid. Open wide the doors for Christ. The Pope was addressing the mighty, the powerful of this world, who feared that Christ might take something away from their power if they were to let him in, if they were to allow the faith to be free. Yes, he would certainly have taken something away from them, the dominion of corruption, the manipulation of law, and the freedom to do as they please, but he would not have taken away anything that pertains to human freedom or dignity, or to the building of a just society. The Pope was also speaking to everyone, especially the young. Are we not all perhaps afraid in some way? If we let Christ enter fully into our lives, if we open ourselves totally to him, are we not afraid that he might take something away from us? Are we not perhaps afraid to give up something significant, something unique, something that makes life so beautiful? Do we not then risk ending up diminished and deprived of our freedom?